You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're keeping you abreast of the fires burning in Southern California. Julie Slater and I will keep you up on all the information throughout the course of the day and, of course, on All Things Considered this afternoon as well. It was my pleasure to welcome back to Air Talk noted writer Megan Daum. For several years, she was an opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times. And one of the things that was so notable, she's very, very calm in her writing style as she lays out her observations, perceptions on the modern world. And she gets such emotional and contentious response to the things that she wrote. It's a fascinating prism for the times in which we live. And she writes about the era of social media, people's highly emotional responses to what's written and said. In her new book, The Problem with Everything, My Journey Through the New Culture Wars. Megan, good to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry. Happy to be back.
It's just always struck me as fascinating because you're a very non-incendiary writer. You know, very, I would call it non-emotional in the way that you write. And yet you trigger so much blowback as you would examine some of the hot button issues in society. And when did you start noticing that changing in your writing, that response?
Well, I started noticing it changing acutely probably 4 or so years ago, well before Trump came into office. I was noticing that there was a lot of rhetoric online, on social media in particular, that didn't necessarily line up with reality. And I think I, like a lot of people who've always associated themselves with the left, being a feminist, being a proper liberal, we started to feel a sort of gulf between what we thought and felt about the issues and what we thought we were supposed to think and feel about them. So it was that kind of cognitive dissonance that gave rise to this book.
It's fascinating. We look at the case of Democratic Congresswoman Katie Hill in the Antelope Valley North L.A. County area, resigning after she admitted that she'd had a relationship involving her husband and a young woman who worked for a campaign, a consensual relationship, the three. And there were nude photos of her that were published on the Red State conservative website and in the Daily Mail. And it's interesting now that it seems like Democrats are the ones who become more hardcore about sexual issues, Al Franken being another example of this, the former senator, than Republicans are. It's been like a flip
right
when it comes to social condemnation of anything related to sex.
Yeah, it used to be that the Republicans were the purity police. Remember Jesse Helms? It just wasn't all that long ago, just a few decades ago. And now it's almost like we have this horseshoe theory. The extremes on the left and the right are sort of meeting each other. And, you know, a lot of what I talk about in the book, I don't want to sort of hammer away at, quote unquote, political correctness or identity politics. I really wanted to examine my own confusion around all of this and look at why maybe people of my generation are not necessarily relating to the concerns of the younger generation and try to figure out how we can bridge the gap rather than just hammering away at each other.
Is part of this, do you think, though, that too much attention is paid to social media? Because you get an amplification of a very small number of people. That's picked up in so-called mainstream media, further amplified. And I often see a disconnect between public opinion polls
yeah
and what's reflected on social media. And is that part of the problem, that it's then cornered people into a box because they're afraid of this amplified reaction?
Yeah, it's like the culture is being held hostage by a few very vocal people on the fringes. And I think, you know, it's easy to say, well, it's just a few people on campuses making all this noise. It's just a few people on Twitter. That's true. But the problem is they have outsized influence. You have college presidents who are not standing up to these you know, minority of activists. You have corporations who will fire people based on the Twitter response of a very small handful of people. And that's the real danger there. It's not the number of people doing it. It's the influence that they have.
Well, and so what's the corrective to this? Because I think one of the challenges has been you've got a movement like Me Too or Time's Up, which have had some very positive effect in the culture, but that, like any other movement, is there's fair critique of it. How do you open up the door for that kind of, you know, less emotionally ratchet up conversation?
I think if you care about the Me Too movement, which I do, you care about due process. You've got to have that be part of the conversation. Really, what this book is a call for nuance. And that sounds simplistic, but I have to say, I think a lot of people have used the Trump quote-unquote emergency as an excuse not to have complicated conversations. It's almost like, oh no, we're in such a crisis. We need all hands on deck. We need to get a very simple message of resistance across. And if we entertain anything that has gray areas or any complexity, it's like we're risking the other side taking it and using it for nefarious purposes. And that's really troubling and counterproductive.
There also, I think, has been a fair number of ad hominem attacks on people as snowflakes, or, you know, just sort of dismissing people's concerns or the sensitivities or their personal experiences as, oh, they're just soft, or, you know, it's a complaint culture or victimization. That too cuts off a legitimate conversation about people's experiences.
Yeah, and those words really don't have any meaning anymore. I mean, I joke that as I was working on the book, I had many iterations and many titles, but one of my sort of joke titles was Woke Me When It's Over. I was going to call the book, and even the term woke, which refers to this sort of, you know, ethos of social justice and the way it's kind of maybe lapped a little too far over the shores in some cases, that word has even just become sort of useless because it's become
kind of a
joke.
Self-parody.
That's
word.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, because the idea of woke has sort of taken on almost a cultish sorts of, everybody believe the same, come to the same analysis of an issue.
Yeah, and the thing is that social justice is important. Intersectionality as a framework, as a legal framework, is incredibly useful. But it's been elasticized and reduced into meaninglessness. And, you know, one of the big things I emphasize in the book is the way my generation, I'm a Gen Xer, we grew up sort of fetishizing our own toughness. We did not want to be vulnerable or weak. That was really just part of our generational identity. And I think maybe the millennials and the people, the Gen Zers or the Zillennials, apparently that's the term now I learned, they might have a similar feeling about fairness. So like we are fetishizing toughness and they're fetishizing fairness. And neither way is totally wrong. We need to sort of share the goods. We need to give them a little of our toughness and accept some of their fairness and kind of figure out how to find the sweet spot.
We're talking with writer Megan Dom, The Problem with Everything, My Journey Through the New Culture Wars. She writes on culture and politics for Medium. She's written 5 books, including The Unspeakable and Other Subjects of Discussion, which won the 2015 Penn Center USA Award for Creative Nonfictions. Also, Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. I think that might have been the first time you joined me on the show to talk about that book, and has contributed to a number of publications. She was, for more than a decade, an opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times. You want to talk with Megan about her writing and a number of the issues that she raises? We're at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. We're going to continue our conversation with Megan. We are also going to update you with the very latest developments on the multiple fires burning in Southern California. We had very good news on that fire that quickly started in the Calabasas area next to the 101 Ventura Freeway. Firefighters got a handle on that, but we still have in Simi Valley the Easy Fire that's burning with high winds. 6,500 homes are evacuated there. And in Riverside County, a recently started fire within the past hour or so in Jurupa Valley, the 60 freeway closed so firefighters can access that fire. We'll continue our conversation with Megan in just 1 minute on Air Talk. Meg and Dom will be at Roman's Books in Pasadena this evening at 7 o'clock in conversation with Annabelle Gurwitch, who was recently with us on Air Talk, just about a month ago. That's at Roman's this evening, 7 o'clock on East Colorado Boulevard in the Playhouse District of Pasadena. We're talking with Megan Dom about her new book, The Problem with Everything, My Journey Through the New Culture Wars. So, Megan, what are your hope that this, touching on all these different issues of the culture wars, that maybe a reader might be motivated to rethink or to change the way we talk about things?
I want more than anything people to be more comfortable with contradiction. You know, part of the problem is that we think in memes, we talk in tweets. There is really no room or very little room in the current public discourse to entertain any sort of complexity. There's a lot of social capital in saying something very reductive, very obvious. You just say the predictable thing, you signal to your tribe, and you get a dopamine hit for doing that. And there's a reward system for that. And on the other side, if you try to say something complicated, not only might you be ignored, you could actually be penalized. There's not a lot of incentive to entertain a complicated story. And really, anything that is true is complicated, right? If we really want to figure out how to fix things and identify facts, we have to say what's true. And that's not something you can do in a tweet, generally.
Well, the other thing I think that's very difficult for social media to process is almost everything involves trade-offs. There is almost nothing pure.
Right.
That you could, whether it's legislation, whether it's an economic plan, whether it involves trade-offs. And so the question is, where do you draw those lines? Whose interests end up superseding someone else's? How does the history of the issue factor into that? What are the limits on what you can predict of the impact of something going forward? All of these nuances that you're describing and those trade-offs just end up sort of somehow in netherworld. They don't end up as actually part of the necessary conversation.
Or you get accused of being on the wrong side of things. If you say, well, let's look at this. You know, it might be a little bit of this, might be a little bit of that. It's very easy for people to come and say, well, you're on the wrong side of history, or you're an apologist, you're a rape apologist, or you're you know, alt-right adjacent or something like that. And that is just, it's incredibly counterproductive. My biggest fear is that that kind of rhetoric is going to essentially hand Trump another 4 years. It's not in the interests of the resistance to pander to this kind of simplistic thinking.
Megan, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And it'll be a fun event tonight at Roman's. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
In conversation with Annabelle Gurwitch, 7 o'clock this evening, Roman's Books on Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena's Playhouse District.